This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. At the White House, President Trump meeting with Britain's prime minister with tariffs at the top of talks, along with ending the war in Ukraine. The president also mentioning a new reason, he says, for imposing tariffs on the European Union for suing American tech companies. ABC's Elizabeth Schulze has more.
The EU has gone after some of the biggest U.S. tech giants, imposing fines on them for anti-competitive practices, digital behavior when it comes to privacy. So this is something that President Trump says justifies additional tariffs on the EU.
Sweeping layoffs continuing throughout federal agencies with tens of thousands of government jobs on the line. Outside the U.S., AID building today in D.C., fired employees given 15 minutes to collect their belongings after being shut out weeks ago. Pope Francis is still battling double pneumonia, but the Vatican says he's improving, saying he continues with oxygen therapy and met with aides today. This is ABC News.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
For WRCE 107.7, I'm Joanne Krulotz. Attorney General Josh Call has joined a coalition of 23 attorneys general in filing an amicus brief asking the U.S. Supreme Court to act to protect a key provision of the Affordable Care Act that guarantees access to critical preventive care for millions of Americans. Attorney General Call in the coalition urged the U.S. Supreme Court to reverse a lower court's decision, stating that the structure of the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force is unconstitutional. Before the ACA's enactment, many Americans struggled to afford preventive services, such as cancer screenings, which can be life-saving, but were often not covered by insurance. Congress enacted the ACA's preventive services provision to eliminate this financial barrier by requiring most private insurance plans to cover preventive services recommended by the task force without charging out-of-pocket cost, including copayments or deductibles. The attorneys general have asked the Supreme Court to reverse the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit's decision in Kennedy versus Braidwood Management Incorporated. According to the coalition's brief, the Fifth Circuit's decision that the task force exercises unconditional authority over insurance plans is incorrect because the task force's members are constitutionally appointed and supervised by the Secretary for the Department of Health and Human Services. The coalition further explains that prohibiting enforcement of the preventive services provision could cause a significant gap in health coverage that states will not be able to fill because federal law prevents them from regulating certain insurance plans. In addition to saving lives, the provision has also reduced socioeconomic, racial, and ethnic disparities in health care by expanding access to a variety of preventive services. For WRCE News, I'm Joanne Krulotz.
The Packers willing to trade. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports from the NFL Combine in Indianapolis, where it's been reported the Packers are taking offers to trade away defensive back Jaire Alexander. He was a first-round pick for the Pack in 2018. Green Bay has not drafted a receiver in the first round in over 20 years. Why not? GM Brian Gutekunst.
You know, it's funny. It's never been like a philosophical thing we've talked about through my time in Green Bay. It's never been something, hey, like we don't want to take wide receivers in the first round. There are certainly opportunities we've had. We thought that was going to happen, and for whatever reason, it didn't. But at the same time, we've had a lot of second-round receivers that have been pretty good players for us.
NBA, the Bucks face the Denver Nuggets tonight at Fiserv Forum. Brooke Lopez on defending Denver center Nikola Jokic.
You know, I'll be on the point of attack a bit, doing my job, just try to be physical with him, make things as difficult as possible as you can for him, and trusting I got my teammates behind me.
That's the Bucks' Brooke Lopez. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Mostly cloudy and still mild today with high temperatures reaching the mid-40s. But it's becoming breezy with winds gusting up to 30 miles per hour today and they'll whip tomorrow up to 40 miles per hour. This as a cold front slams through the state, and it may spark up a few scattered showers. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Currently, it's 48.
The Dom Salvia Show.
You know, Harvey, the seemingly purposeful no action. What's your sense on the leadership in the Dem Party right now, Harvey?
I'm ashamed of them. What did Trump have on all these people?
Yeah, right.
That we get this kind of silence. Will the Democratic leadership figure out that it's their task to start articulating a Democratic, small d, Democratic vision and project that these people can rally behind? Bam.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app.
Did you know? VA home loans are a key to home ownership for those who served.
In the military, we make a lot of sacrifices, and with the VA loan, it makes it easier for us to get a home.
We were able to purchase this home and then use the money that we were going to use as a down to actually fix up the home. I would tell anybody who is interested in getting a VA loan to just do it.
To learn more about VA home loans, visit va.gov/homeloans.
Rational Revolution with Mark Becker.
This weekend, we ask the question, where is the GOP? And we ask it to former RNC chairman Michael Steele.
Rational Revolution with Mark Becker, Saturdays at 2, Sundays at 1 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. This is News from the Center, WRCE.
Welcome, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Got my special guest co-host with me today, Tom Paulswitz. He joins me every Thursday on the show. He's a two-time congressional candidate, Navy vet, small business owner, all-around great guy. And Tom and I'm going to speak for you here, are very excited to bring on our next guest, Jeremy Janae, the creator and journalist behind Urban Milwaukee. And we've created, Jeremy, this new segment on the show that we're going to call Milwaukee is Microcosm, because in many ways, as goes Milwaukee, so goes the state. And my personal belief is that so frequently the idea that there is some sort of weird divide between Milwaukee and the rest of the state, or some sort of urban-rural divide, when in fact many of the issues that challenge communities in Milwaukee are the same issues that are challenging in other parts of the state. And so whether it falls into one of any of these three categories or all of the above, we're going to try to highlight stories that may be coming out of Milwaukee, but that are really perhaps an exemplar of Milwaukee as like the tip of the spear, an issue that may be percolating here first, but is likely to reach your neck of the woods. Or are great examples that we can use about how to know if your particular local government is working. And lastly, the third category, hey, this isn't a generally applicable issue, things like school funding and the like. So with all of that lengthy intro, let me say again to you, Jeremy, thank you for being here. And I talked earlier this week about how to know when local government is working and some of the characteristics of elected officials when they're doing their job, some of the things I've gleaned over my years in public service. But today we're going to probably give the little example of what definitely not to do as an elected official.
Yes.
The sad, sordid tale of the one-term disgraced former City of Milwaukee City Attorney Tierman Spencer. What is the scandal? I mean, maybe I should say this. Can you please explain this one particular of many, many scandals surrounding Mr. Spencer? Because he was in criminal court this week, was he not?
He was there yesterday. And thanks for having me. Happy to join the show. And Tom, good to see you. Chairman Spencer, you phrased it correctly, that let's look just at this scandal.
Yeah,
this
right.
One, right. This one gets a little wonky to understand until you wrap your head around it and you're like, oh, well, if what the DA's office alleges is true, then that's definitely a criminal act.
Yes.
And I'll walk you through what that is. Tierman Spencer is a collector of cars. Before he became city attorney, he was actually a tenant in the same office building I'm in right now. And I to know Tierman Spencer 15 years ago as a guy that was selling cars. Well, I hadn't kept up with his car collection for quite a while, but it turns out he had it in a building on Martin Luther King Drive on the north side of Milwaukee. And while he was city attorney, he is alleged to have instructed his own attorneys, the public attorneys, people that work for the city of Milwaukee, to prepare a legal opinion whether it is legal to store cars without an occupancy permit. Now, what he left out is that's exactly what he was doing. And if they said it's legal, then he would save all kinds of money. He then got that memo. It's described as an, quote, informal memo. And instead of giving that to the Department of Neighborhood Services, which is his client and enforces things like the building code, the zoning code, he provided it to his landlord, who on a building inspection handed a City of Milwaukee document on City of Milwaukee letterhead to the city building inspector, which obviously created quite the circumstance for them to deal with of, well, why do you have this and how do you have this? And then the icing on the cake and really what's alleged here, and I think will be really interesting to see if this sticks, is he has a misdemeanor obstruction of justice. That's not the exact term, but misleading an officer of the court term, because he agreed to a voluntary interview where they had already had a search warrant, gone through his private email, saw how he forwarded this memo, routed it around to use it for his private benefit. And he denied ever sending it. And then later in the meeting, he was like, well, maybe I sent it to someone. So just a stunning case of using public resources for private benefit.
So to summarize here, Jeremy, Mr. Spencer had a bunch of cars likely illegally being stored without the appropriate permit in a building. He then, and the city of Milwaukee was about to charge his landlord a hefty sum because of this alleged violation, which would have been passed on as a cost to Mr. Spencer. So Mr. Spencer, whose former office's website says that they do not provide legal advice and are legally forbidden from providing legal advice to any private citizen or member of the public. Right. Mr. Spencer then used his public office's resources to gin up what is, I've read it, a somewhat very suspicious and poorly reasoned legal opinion that, no, it's totally fine if Mr. Spencer has all these cars in this building and there's no violation and no further action needed. In essence, Mr. Spencer was at odds with the city, who is his client in this matter. What he should have done was run for the hills and have absolutely nothing to do with this enforcement action at all whatsoever. And what he did instead was basically steal government services for his own private benefit, intercede by both appearing at an inspection and calling the Department of Neighborhood Services so that he wouldn't have to pay more for his wonky, dusty old collection of cars. Am I getting this about right?
I think that's a great summary of it. The assistant district attorney, Nicholas Heitman, who was laying out the case yesterday, he was, and be wary of journalists about to do math on the radio, he was laying out some figures, and he totaled up about Tierman might have saved himself $8,000. Let's use that as a marker, $8,000. Tierman now faces an up to $10,000 fine, right, and imprisonment of not more than 3.5 years for his felony case. Yes. And then the misdemeanor charge of obstructing an officer, an additional $10,000 fine. So he did not save any money here. Things go to the maximum.
So Maggie, I'm going to step in because I'm not an attorney. But it, to me, this sounds a lot like what's happening on the federal level is, you know, I have my attorneys and I need them to go find out a solution to my problem. Right. So I've got a problem.
My personal problem.
I've got some problems I need somebody to go figure out a solution to.
Well, and I wanted to just have us all take a pause, and I'll make this commentary. Anybody that's interested in sort of the saga that was Tierman Spencer, go ahead and Google it. I mean, if you got an afternoon and you want to do some reading about incompetency and complete buffoonery in government, go read about Tierman Spencer. But I tried to like distill down what were the red flags that Mr. Spencer was going to be such a disaster. And it was almost immediately out of the box as soon as he took office. HR complaints started rolling in. Yep. There was very suspicious sort of decisions and a very demonstrable lack of any idea about the ethical restrictions on public officials. When questioned about a variety of what I'm going to say legally dubious positions and opinions that he was writing, he didn't do more analysis and come back and join issue on the merits. Oh, no, 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 no. What he did was call press conferences, blame the media, blame racism, blame everything under the sun other than himself and his own demonstrated incompetency. Does this sound familiar to anyone? I mean, I wanted to use this example today because Mr. Spencer is a Democrat, right? And the point here is incompetence and buffoonery is not the exclusive purview of MAGA, though I think it occurs with much greater frequency.
Right.
It is the purview of those who are incompetent buffoons, right? And they come in all flavors, shapes, and sizes, and political leanings. Exactly. Tom, your thoughts on the things that people should look out for in elected officials?
Well, I mean, it's pretty obvious in this situation. And, you know, and kudos to Evan Goyke for running and you know, working on changing the environment in that office. But, you know, when you see somebody who's running that has all these different red flags, the common sense person would go, maybe that's not going to end up well, you know, but I think it gets back to it. And Jeremy, I'm glad you're doing it, right? It really gets back to reporting and making sure the facts are known for people. I read Urban Milwaukee every day. I think it's a great publication just because it helps.
Say that again.
I read it every day. It's a great publication, but I read it because it sheds light on the things that happen in the city that need light shed on. And it really breaks through because it's not, I don't consider it to be one political element versus another political element. It's just, here's what's happening.
Yes.
And I really appreciate that. And that is what people need to know. Cause I agree with you, Maggie, all the red flags were there and they all came about in the first, 6 months of office. And here we are today having to deal with this. And I'm sure Evan's got better things to do than have to deal with this, but it does need to be cleaned up. And I think it's incredibly important that we hold people accountable.
Well, and this is getting, thank you so brilliantly for setting up my meta point, which is I encourage everyone, whether you're in Wausau or Waukesha, Rhinelander to Racine, Appleton to, I'm forgetting another A, Amory. Okay, there we go. I got them all in there. A little alliteration this afternoon. Does it, if you are from one of these places, not from Milwaukee, I encourage you to go check out and check out Urban Milwaukee and read an article or two, not because it's happening in your backyard, but because it shows you how important it is to have a local media outlet that is doing that kind of work. Now, in many of our regions of the state, civic media is trying to fill that gap in many ways. But there is, again, I think the vigorousness of written journalism where people actually come to know these players within local government. Because I guarantee the decisions that are getting made down the street at your village town hall will have more impact on the quality of your life and your children's happiness than what's happening in the Beltway outside Washington, D.C. Guaranteed. So I wholeheartedly concur with Tom, Jeremy, that Urban Milwaukee is a treasure. I think it makes not just Milwaukee better, but the state better. And again, emphasis on the fact that it is an apolitical, non-political, straight journalism reporting. It's just me with all the political opinions this afternoon. When we come back, I want to tease a little bit. We're going to have to take care of some business here in a moment. But when we come back, I want to talk about the Great Lakes and Lake Michigan liners and how much we got a new dock coming in and what's going on and how that may be impacting other parts of the state well.
Yes.
Folks, we got Jeremy Janae from Urban Milwaukee and Tom Paulswitz, my special guest co-host today. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Back with more in just a moment.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Wisconsin's next major election is already here. The race for state Supreme Court is ramping up with just a few weeks to go before the April 1st general election. Much like the race 2 years ago, this will determine the balance of power on the court. If Susan Crawford wins, the court remains in liberal control. If Brad Schimmel wins, the court flips back to a right-wing majority. But there are a number of differing dynamics from the race in 2023. That race, won by Janet Protasiewicz, was the culmination of a years-long effort for liberals to win control of the court. Now they're playing defense to keep that majority. This also begins a run of 6 years in a row with a race for Wisconsin Supreme Court on the spring election ballot. Because of which justices will be up in coming years, if Crawford wins this year, the court will likely remain in liberal control until at least 2028. Find more bigger picture analysis of the race in my latest column at the Recombobulation Area.
I'm Earl Ingram, host of The Earl Ingram Show. We're celebrating Black History Month by sharing some powerful interviews and stories featuring Wisconsin's own trailblazers. We're also listening to you because conversations can make a difference.
It's got to be had, and we have to have it on a regular basis, not only on the air, but around the coffee table. I was more optimistic than before than I am now. America's taken a big backward step.
I do try to have that conversation about racial disparity and give small history lessons as much as I can.
Join us to continue the conversations as we stand together and learn together. And let's celebrate Black History Month every month. I'm Earl Ingram.
The Earl Ingram Show on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app. News from the Center, WRCE.
On the board, giving me 2 days of some smooth jazz in the afternoons. I love it, Kel. My name is Maggie Don. You are listening to the Maggie Don Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We got Kel on the board, my co-host Tom Paulswitz with me. We've got a special guest this half hour for this installment of Milwaukee as Microcosm. As goes Milwaukee, so goes the state of Wisconsin. We got Jeremy Janine from Urban Milwaukee joining us. He's the creator of that fine publication. And I wanted to talk with you, Jeremy. Great reporting about changing expectations and about passenger loads relating to all of these different cruise lines and other boat lines that come in to the port of Milwaukee. Tell us what's going on.
I think most people in Wisconsin would be astounded to know that cruising is now this big industry, not just for Milwaukee, but also for Algoma and Sturgeon Bay. And there are some absolutely massive vessels that come into Milwaukee now. This Viking has two of these ships. They're called Seaway Max. And what that means is it's the biggest ship that can come into the Great Lakes from the ocean. 378 passengers, another like 250 crew members. And Milwaukee, as I describe it, is a victim of geography here. We're a winner for a rare chance because of where we are. And that is when you come from Toronto, take a cruise to Milwaukee, Milwaukee's the turnaround point. So that's people getting off the ship here. That's the end of their journey. They're hanging out. Maybe they're taking a trip to Madison. Maybe they're going down to Chicago afterwards. But then a new group is coming in. So that's an extra tourism boost for the state
of
Wisconsin.
It's a twofer.
A twofer, yes. A twofer turnaround for the Miami of the Midwest, which is almost like a Milwaukee microcosm there.
I love it, Miami of the Midwest. Yes. So what? Go ahead, Jeremy.
Yeah, so the big thing is this industry is kind of boomed out of nowhere. All of a sudden, in 2022, Milwaukee set a record, 13,600-some passengers. Last year, they almost eclipsed it. But then next year, or this year now, it's 2025. It's hard to believe to think about cruising when we're still in February. But there's actually a notable drop expected. And that's because, and we're going to talk about this here, some of these ships might be a little bit fickle. Viking is taking one of its big ships out of the lake. But then when Milwaukee opens a massive new $17 million cruise dock next year, it's bringing that ship back, and Milwaukee not only expects to get up to that 13,000 person record, but get up to 18,000 passengers in 2026.
It's a awesome. Big economic boon, not just for Milwaukee, but I think it's driving additional tourism and awareness of the entire state. Wisconsin is a relatively cheap place to recreate. As I remind all of my old colleagues and friends from New York and Chicago and Western portions of the world. So, again, you mentioned Sturgeon Bay, Algoma, Port Washington. Now, Port Washington doesn't have these massive ships coming in, but they are going along the coast of Lake Michigan. So it's a big deal for the state. What do they attribute the changes that Viking is making, and why are some of the cruise lines pulling ships? Others are maybe committing more. What's going on there?
Viking has these two new ships. I think they just kind of want to show it off. They're also in a little bit of a holding pattern, waiting for Milwaukee to finally build this dock. Mm. Milwaukee's been trying to build this dock for 4 years now, and it'll finally be there. These massive ships, the biggest ones, when they come in, they can't dock at a conventional dock. They have to go to the heavy lift dock, which is code for Jones Island, the inner harbor of Milwaukee. If you wanted to put Milwaukee's best foot forward, docking next to the sewage treatment plant is not it.
It's not a good idea. And God bless the Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewage District. Post-cryptosporidium outbreak, MMSD is a nationwide hero. It's one of the reasons we've got the Urban Ecology Center and a great commitment to fresh water.
Right?
Right. If you don't know what to put on your lawns this spring, this is not a PSA. It is a complete plug for Milorganite, brought to you by the Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewerage District. Yes. But yes, Jeremy, we do not want cruisers coming off their boats next to Jones Island. It ain't the best foot forward, as you put it. Again, what's the investment that Milwaukee is making, which, again, will be a great economic boon to the rest of the state? How much are City of Milwaukee taxpayers investing in this economic future of not just Milwaukee and the state?
If you pick apart that $17 million, it's about half that cost that city taxpayers are putting in.
Okay.
And they won't get that directly back by this tariff fee that passengers pay when they get out the dock there.
Yep.
But the vision is that because of the victim of geography I talked about before, you'll get it back because they're staying in hotels. You get it back in sales tax dollars because they're going through the airport. You're generating economic activity, and you're in the right spot to generate double the economic activity. There's also a long-term vision of this site. And if you're trying to look on a map, where is it? Just at the south end of the Hone Bridge, that there will be development around it that could eventually be this whole industry, not necessarily housing or anything, but tourist-focused industry that caters to getting even more of these ships.
Beautiful. Which is all great news for Milwaukee. We've got a texter that gave me a chuckle just moments ago, texting in from the 920. When you are talking about Lake Michigan, don't you mean to say Lake Illinois? I heard Jamie Pritzker saying he's renaming it. Not to get too political, but very funny. Jeremy, I really appreciate all that you do and all of the time from both yourself and the other incredible reporters at Urban Milwaukee. I'm really looking forward to doing this segment. Today was a little bit special. We did it at 3 o'clock. But folks, if you're listening, you're going to find Milwaukee as microcosm, as goes Milwaukee, so goes Wisconsin. Every Wednesday, we're going to be doing this on the regular on Wednesdays. Thanks so much, Jeremy. I really appreciate your time explaining to us all of these things that I probably wouldn't otherwise know about. So thank you so much, folks. My name is Maggie Dawn. We've had a very special guest this half hour. His name is Jeremy Janine. He is the creator and one of the journalists at Urban Milwaukee. I've got special guest co-host Tom Paulswitz with me, and each and every one of you, 855-755-4842. I also wanted to break a bit of news. Gentlemen, we'll talk about it with Tom on the flip side. The top DOJ spokesperson has just resigned, citing a toxic work environment. Now, that's a MAGA, folks. When the MAGAs are saying it's a little toxic, that's when we all need to be deeply, deeply concerned. We're going to take care of a bit of our business here. Again, thanks so much, Jeremy. Good to
see you. Thanks, Jeremy. Awesome.
Thanks for having me. Great to see both of you.
Keep up the good work. Yep.
Yes. We'll be back in just a moment. If you are on the phone line, stay there. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. We're going to talk when we come back about DEI in the time of Donald Trump. What is actually going the frickin' frack on? And we're going to share with you some things that MLK has said that you probably have never heard of before. Keep it locked. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Hold you tonight, city girl.
This is News from the Center, WRCE. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Recently, there has been some animosity around the U.S. cheese industry. I'm Ben Jarbo with the Midwest Farm Report, and Ryan Yonkman, the vice president of EverAg, is here to explain why European cheese may be causing some worry.
Their mozzarella price has been hanging around $1.90. And so when you take that into account and then you back into the U.S. demand numbers, which have not been that great, we had like Pizza Hut, I think it was Papa John's and Domino's dropped their pizza sales figures this week. They were not very good, less than expected. We seem to be still sitting on thin ice in regards to demand. And so when we take into account likely a light export market forward, U.S. demand where it's at, U.S. milk growing, we're looking at this cheese market as something we're quite nervous about.
Yonkman says that although the cheese industry is looking worrisome currently, that the milk production is looking to be strong this spring. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Ben Jarbo, and we'll take a look at those closing markets right after this.
Well, hold on to your britches, everybody. It's time to go nuts at the Springfield Corners Testicle Festival. March 8th, you can enjoy deep-fried delicacies along with ice-cold beverages and live music by the Lights Out Band. Join me, the fabulous Farm Babe, along with the rest of the Midwest Farm Report team at Springfield Corners for your chance to win concert tickets and to try some fried Rocky Mountain oysters. It all kicks off after 2 p.m. on March 8th. Springfield Corners. See Facebook for more details. Come on along. We're headed to the Canadian Rockies. I'm Pam Yonke, inviting you to join me July 26th through August 4th. We'll begin at Calgary's Living History Museum. Then it's off to Banff for a guided tour. Next, we board a Via Rail train for phenomenal views of the Canadian Rockies. Off to Vancouver for award-winning wines at Lulu Island Winery. Then we ferry to Vancouver Island to visit a bison ranch and a dairy farm. Go to holidayvacations.com, enter keyword PAM to get a brochure or watch a travel show.
I'm Ben Jarbo with the Midwest Farm Report. Now let's take a look at how the markets finished up on this Thursday. Grain is taking a bit of a hit today as cash corn is down 13.5 at 464 and 3 quarters, with new crop corn down 5 and a quarter at 461 and 3 quarters. Cash soybeans are down 1 and 3 quarters at 1022 and 3 quarters, with new crop soybeans closing down 3 and 3 quarters at 1041 and 3 quarters. March wheat contracts are down 19 and a quarter at 546 and 3 quarters, with July contracts down 17 at 576 and 3 quarters. Class 3 milk contracts for March are up 15 cents at 1897 hundredweight, with April contracts up 9 at 1854 hundredweight. Barrels of cheese closed up 1 at 188.5, and 40-pound blocks remained even at 187. And butter finished up 1 at 234.5. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Ben Jarbo.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Mostly cloudy and still mild today, with high temperatures reaching the mid-40s. But it's becoming breezy, with winds gusting up to 30 miles per hour today, and they'll whip tomorrow up to 40 miles per hour. This as a cold front slams through the state, and it may spark up a few scattered showers. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Currently, it's 48.
We are the keepers of the wild. For more than 80 years, we've been committed to conserving the natural landscapes that define our nation. Nothing is more important than maintaining wild spaces for adventurers to explore and wildlife to thrive. We are America's hunters and target shooters. Together with firearm, ammunition, and archery manufacturers, we've supported the conservation of more than 36 million acres of American wildlands. For more information, visit OutdoorStewards.org.
Earl Ingram.
The one and only Professor Bob Harvey has graced the airlines with us. Let's go to Vincent.
With this new administration, African American history is under assault. To Professor Harvey, how important are we, is it to, for us to fight back, not only for Black History Month, but throughout the year?
African American history is not going anywhere. Start digging into history. You find out that long before the Mayflower, Blacks were already here.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Jane Mattner and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Jane is out, but I, Greg Bach, am your guest host for the day, and we have political editor Dan Schaefer recombobulating the news, and this shouldn't be a thing. Join us.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Got a special guest co-host with me today, Tom Paulswitz. Got Calvin on the board. Got Jamie, my senior producer, helping me color in the lines today. You know, sometimes I get a little messy, Tom. But good news, everyone. Yeah, right? Good news, everyone. The Brewers are back on TV. Mm-hmm. I was so excited to actually see baseball on a television screen last night. The first televised Brewers spring training game is tonight. I'll have to sneak in some Brewers in between the French Connection and Heist. Of course, I got my evening watch schedule all planned out here. Tom, wanted to talk with you today a little bit about DEI in the time of Donald Trump, because this is the bookend to our discussion earlier today about the death of expertise in government, because let's be very clear here. This has nothing to do with merit.
No.
And Donald Trump is not putting the most meritorious candidates forward in basically any way, shape, or form in so many departments. Let's just take the example of the firing of Air Force General C.Q. Brown as chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He's being replaced with a guy who is retired and who does not meet the minimum legal requirements put into place in 1986 to become the chairman of the Joint Chiefs because he lacks combat command experience.
And he's not a four-star.
Not a four-star, retired. They're not even sure how to recall him back to active duty to serve. Right. And he needs a presidential waiver. Again, not about merit.
Right.
And I wanted to share this other bit with everyone this afternoon. Trump is firing the interim ICE director. It's a guy by the name of Caleb Vitello is the current interim ICE director. He's being fired. Caleb is described by folks at ICE as even keeled. This is a quote. I honestly can't think of a single thing that's controversial about him. I don't want to call him a Boy Scout, but he's as close as it gets.
He's not cruel enough.
He's not, right. And he's very popular amongst the rank and file ICE folks, which is law enforcement. Right. And he has 20 years of experience. Right. Guess who's rumored to be replacing him, Tom?
Could it be somebody with no experience?
It could be someone with absolutely no experience. Would it also surprise you that apparently the person is 27 years old?
Right.
And their last job was working for Kristi Noem as the head of the Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fisheries.
Which completely translates, right, to the position. And, you know, 27, held that kind of position. Makes sense to me. Let's give it a try.
And of course, this Madison Sheehan also does not meet the statutory qualifications for the position, which includes at least 5 years of law enforcement experience.
Right. And maybe not 27. Not to say that at 27 there are some people who could do it, but and this is it. Like you just hit it right on the head, though. This isn't about merit.
No.
This is about we want to be promoting people who are in our sphere of influence and think like us, and I can control or will act accordingly. You know, I just read an article a little while ago about the difference between Nick Cannon and Elon Musk.
Yeah, it was written by James Causey in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. They called Nick Cannon a deadbeat dad. Elon Musk is just spreading his seed.
Right. And they're exactly in the same position. And I would say Nick Cannon is probably treating his children better than Elon Musk is.
Yeah, I'm not aware of any Nick Cannon child that has disavowed their parentage and said that they never want to speak to Nick Cannon again. I haven't heard that.
And regardless of how I feel about them having so many children, which is up to them, But to completely characterize them in different manners, and it's literally just because of the color of their skin, because they're both wealthy. They both have expertise in their fields.
Yep.
But that's the only difference.
It is truly shameless what's going on, and I want to make this very, very clear to people. If you do not have a diverse team, I guarantee you, you do not have the best of the best.
Right.
Because only when you have a diverse group of people and applicants and you're reaching into all different types of backgrounds and communities and life experiences, that's how you get the best of the best.
Right.
Meritocracy only works to the degree that it's possible with all of our inherent biases and subconscious preferences and all this stuff. It only works if you're actually getting a cross section of the people who meet the minimum stinking qualifications for the job.
Exactly. Paul Krugman, he referenced the study that had been done, and I can't remember who did it, but it said that diverse teams have a 25% better output than teams that are not diverse, just because you have different forms of thinking. You have different experiences. You know, and here's the great thing is some companies are saying, I don't care what you're doing at the national level. We're going to keep doing what we do, because it's right for our organization. So kudos to Apple. Kudos to a couple of other ones that are continuing to do the right thing.
Let's name them. Here are, according to the NAACP, here are four major companies that have recommitted to DEI. And again, the goal of having an actual meritocracy, which
yes,
requires a precondition to meritocracy, is diversity. If you believe in meritocracy, you cannot get there without diversity. Delta Airlines, Apple, Ben and Jerry's, as well as Costco. Go Costco. Also, according to the NAACP, here's where none of us should be shopping anymore: McDonald's, Meta, Walmart, and Target.
Yep.
By the way, I looked this up because I was just really curious. They put out statistics on foot traffic in retailers.
Ah, awesome.
Foot traffic at Costco, way up. Foot
yep.
traffic at Target, way down. good news.
What a surprise. Yep.
Yeah, no kidding. I thought it might be important for us to listen to some of the most wealthy and powerful Black Americans describe being Black in America, in
yeah.
case you might be a white person listening and you're thinking, it's just fine. I don't know what everyone's complaining about. Calvin, I'm reading Caleb on my sheet because we're getting to a quote by a guy named Caleb. Calvin, will you please run those cuts about being Black in America?
I'm a Black man with a bunch of money and having a crib in Brentwood. And having the word spray painted over my
gate,
that lets you know I ain't too far removed. How far money or access or how you become in life as an African-American man, female, they will always try to figure out a way to let you know that you're still beneath them.
No matter how much money you have, no matter how famous you are, no matter how many people admire you, being Black in America is tough.
It's LeBron James. Next up.
It shows up for me differently. It shows up, I'm in a store and the person and doesn't obviously know that I carry the Black card. And so they make an assessment based upon the way I look.
That's Oprah, and she's not talking about the Black card as in being Black. She's talking about the Amex Black card, like the no limit. I am a baller of ballers. I can buy this entire store. And she's still getting eyed like, are you right. going to pass the credit check?
Yes.
Next up, this is Octavia Spencer.
The thing, women of color on that spectrum, we make far less than white women.
No doubt. And last but not least, sports commentator Shannon Sharp.
The hardest job in America is being Black, because it's the one thing you can't outrun. Even as I became more famous and more financially secure, guess what I still was? Black.
Truth. A recent Harvard study I pulled up says that reported that 92% of African Americans feel discriminated against in the United States.
92%.
92 percent. Now, let's be really clear here. There is a whole movement that is one of the three legs of the MAGA stool that is explicitly racist and believes in white supremacy and believes that white people should run everything in the country.
Yes.
That is just part of that movement. Mm-hmm. If you find that offensive, I'm challenged by why you want to keep company with people that think that that's just fine.
It's amazing, isn't it? And that's the part I don't understand, because the whole MAGA movement has been associated with racism since the beginning. And for people, because I've talked to a lot of people who said, well, I don't think so, and I'm still going to vote Republican because that's not my viewpoint. You know, if you vote for it, that means you are complicit in it and that you are propagating it. And right now what's happening is they're tearing down the little bit of progress that was made to help to level the playing field at the national level. And I love that, to see that companies are going, it doesn't matter what you're doing, we're going to keep doing what we're doing, because yes, diversity matters. Diversity works. Diversity is in our best interest. We're still the melting pot of the world. And we're at the
salad
forefront.
Bowl, depending on your metaphor.
Because melting sounds terrible, doesn't it? Yes,
it does.
So, but bigger picture wise, it's like we're still the grand experiment. And if we stop now, or we send the message that we're going to stop, because this isn't America, this isn't who the rest of us are. And I think that's important for people to understand. I have some people I work with on the coaching side that are doing great things to help underprivileged communities and really working very hard to take a step back and say, how do we alleviate the fear and let them know there are still allies? There are still people that care. There are still people that are committed to this.
Well, and to that point, Tom, I'm glad we're getting here, because all of this was sort of, we've got to build up to, listen, Wisconsin is an overwhelmingly white state. And so if you're a white person out there and you're thinking to yourself, well, what do I do if I want to be an ally, to support people who look differently or may think differently than I, because I want to live American values every day. I want to live Wisconsin values every day. One of the things is to educate yourself about Black history as a white person. And I thought the exhaustion that I hear from my friends who are people of color about, well, it's your responsibility to teach white people about being Black. No, it's a white person's responsibility to understand the completeness of history with all of its complexities. I wanted to give us an opportunity to listen to author Casey Gerald. He was on MSNBC Morning Joe, and he was responding to a comment by Mike Barnicle. And this about sums it up. Calvin?
The success of the Civil
War. Yeah. Calvin, can you play? Can you hear me? Cut 13.
An American history book, 7th, 8th grade, high school.
Can you turn this way up, because we can't hear it well?
Is that if you pick up an American history book, 7th, 8th grade, high school, you will read or see nothing about what you have talked about here this morning.
Well, perhaps that's what the reality is for in your neighborhood. I grew up in Oak Cliff, Texas, and I was taught by Black women who taught me my history. So I think there are many people, you talk about hard research, Black people have been doing hard research on this question for a long time. George Washington Williams wrote a history of the Negro people in America in 1882. W.B. Du Bois was writing in the early 20th century. So I think the reality in this conversation reminds me, Black people fighting white supremacy in this country is a bit like Don Quixote tilting at windmills. I mean, we've thrown generation after generation after generation of brilliant Black people at trying to get white people to understand the truth of their society. I have no interest in throwing more Black genius at this question. So I think if you want your children to know the history of America, you should read the historians, whether it's Dr. Kendi, you should read Evelyn Higginbotham, you should read Henry Louis Gates, you should read W.B. Du Bois, you should read, I mean, I could send you a whole, we should post on the show, a whole list of Black historians who have taught the history of this country, and perhaps some white ones as well. David Blight just won
Yes, that is the point. Yes. I am going to share that list of authors, as well as Casey Gerald's book, There Will Be No More Miracles Here. On our show notes for today. You're also going to find the work by Jeremy Janine of Urban Milwaukee in our show notes for today. We're going to take a quick break, come back for our last segment of the day. My name is Maggie Dawn. I got Tom Paulsiewicz with me.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
An elegant, intimate experience in fine dining is right here at Ho-Chunk Gaming, Wisconsin Dells. The Copper Oak Steakhouse and Lounge features choice cuts of Angus beef and fresh seafood prepared to perfection over an open flame grill, complemented by an extensive selection of fine wines and signature martinis. A passion for detail in exceptional dining. The Copper Oak Steakhouse and Lounge at Ho-Chunk Gaming, Wisconsin Dells. Open Thursday through Sunday. Call and make your reservations today.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Three elected officials in the Pennsylvania borough of Milburn are being arraigned on mail and voter fraud charges relating to a 2021 attempt to manipulate a town mayoral election. The Delaware County Daily Times reports that two borough council members allegedly recruited willing voters outside the Philadelphia suburb to support a third council member's write-in campaign for mayor. The town of 1,200 residents has only 549 registered voters and one of the highest concentrations of citizens of South Asian descent in the country. The three allegedly solicited personal information from the outside voters, then logged in and changed their state voter registration addresses on the state voter information portal to a Milburn address. The Daily Times quoted the indictment as alleging, in total, defendants Muhammad Nural Hassan, Muhammad Mansour Ali, and Muhammad Rafkol Islam falsely registered nearly three dozen non-Milburn residents as Milburn voters and cast ballots for those non-Milburn voters in the 2021 general election for mayor of Milburn, unquote. Hassan still lost the election 165 to 138. Defendant Islam was arraigned February 25th, and Ali and Hassan face a judge February 27th. Actual voter fraud remains exceedingly rare nationwide and even more rarely affects the outcome of elections despite partisan disinformation. Find more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
News from the Center, WRCE.
Welcome back, everybody. It is the last segment of the Maggie Dawn Show for today. You got Dom Salvia coming up next here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Maggie Dawn. We've got Tom Paulsiewicz, special guest host, with us today. We're talking about DEI in the age of Donald Trump. We're going to close out today with some of the things that Martin Luther King Jr. has said that you might not have heard of. Because I have tried to explain a few times on this program that the divides between rural and urban, black and white, men and women, straight and LGBTQIA+, those are all invented, artificial, bogus divisions. And they are created, they are constructs that have been created, these divisions are constructs that have been created and utilized forever in human history. They are created, utilized, and perpetrated and perpetuated by those that stand to gain from our divisions. And who is that? Well, that is our billionaire overlords. That is who gains. So these quotes from MLK get at that very point. But I also wanted to share another commentator, an African-American, who broke down very appropriately what the DEI, when it is said by the MAGAs, is in effect like a curse word. It's like using the N-word.
It's a slur.
Correct.
Absolutely.
This man's name is Garrison Hayes. Let's take a listen, Cal.
The success of the civil rights movement meant that being overtly bigoted wasn't okay anymore. The use of terms like in this new polite society would get you fired, require an apology tour, and mark you as a person outside of the mainstream for the rest of your days. Kind of.
I is what I is,
and I'm not Paula changing. Dean.
And as a result, I think that people started to believe that racism was either a thing of the past or something that would altogether die off once all the old stuck-in-their-ways bigots went to their graves. Which is a nice idea, quaint even. But that isn't how the world works. Racist ideas are routinely rebranded into something more palatable for every generation. And the current DEI discourse is exactly that. DEI, or diversity, equity, and inclusion, describes programs, policies, and practices that are designed to make environments, usually workplaces or educational institutions, more fair and welcoming to folks who have been historically excluded from those institutions. Think Black people, women, veterans, immigrants, folks with disabilities, queer people. I have my critiques of diversity, equity, and inclusion, mainly that, ironically, it poses no significant threats to the status quo, precisely because it is designed to uphold and serve the status quo. But to be abundantly clear, DEI is an objectively good thing, and the people who stand to benefit from it the most are the highly qualified professionals who would otherwise be overlooked by poor hiring and recruitment practices. The reality is that you wouldn't need DEI if workplaces were hiring based on merit and not nepotism in the first place. And yet, the federal government is taking steps to make DEI illegal. And all of this comes on the heels of a years-long effort to demonize diversity, equity, and inclusion programs as a handout for Black people, for women, and queer folks. And this is where the modern slur comes into play. There was a time when DEI was simply the shorthand acronym for diversity, equity, and inclusion, a harmless descriptor. But DEI has become a word unto itself for these people. And that word is intended as a modern slur.
Folks, you are just listening to Garrison Hayes breaking it down better than I ever could. Yes. I got to roll those tapes when somebody nailed it better than I could. Let's share some of these things that MLK said that you may not have been aware of. And Tom, if you want to take a couple of them too, please do. This is from February 23rd, 1968, at the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, a speech that was titled "The Minister to the Valley." Whenever the government provides opportunity and privileges for white people and rich people, they call it subsidized. When they do it for Negro and poor people, they call it welfare. The fact is that everybody in this country lives on welfare. Suburbia was built with federally subsidized credit. And the highways that take our white brothers out to the suburb were built with federally subsidized money to the tune of 90%. Everybody is on welfare in this country. The problem is that we all too often have socialism for the rich and rugged free enterprise capitalism for the poor. That is the problem.
Yeah. And I'll piggyback on that one. Something he said August 16th, 1967. At the same conference, we have deluded ourselves into believing the myth that capitalism grew and prospered out of the Protestant ethic of hard work and sacrifices. Fact is that capitalism was built on the exploitation and suffering of enslaved people and continues to thrive on the exploitation of poor, Black and white, both here and abroad.
Powerful words. We need only listen. We need only listen. This is well-trod ground, folks. Let's see here. One more. Again, August 16th, 1967, to the CLC in Atlanta. And one day we must ask the question, why are there 40 million poor people in America? When do you begin to ask that question? You are finally raising questions about the economic system, about a broader distribution of wealth. When you ask that question, you begin to question the capitalistic economy. Yes. We've got to ask questions about the whole of society. That's me and you. That's Tom and Maggie. It's Cal. It's each one of you listeners. Thanks so much, Tom. It's always a pleasure to be here with you. Folks, I'll be back tomorrow, same time, same bat channel. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Key and Peele writer Rich Tallarico, who wrote the iconic substitute teacher sketch. Rich will also make the popcorn pick of the week. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8. Matt Nair on air.
A lot of federal employees got this fork in the road letter. You can stay, but you're not really guaranteed anything. Luann's husband is a Vietnam veteran.
I wrote a letter to President Musk. My husband put his life on the line for our country.
Wow.
You are putting my husband's life on the line right now by cutting all those programs that are keeping him alive at the VA. Please call your legislators and tell them to stand up. This is not what America is.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app. This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center, and always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. At a joint news conference with Britain's Prime Minister at the White House, President Trump says talks were productive and focused on trade and ending the war in Ukraine. The president says they're moving closer to a peace deal for Ukraine and backs NATO's Article 5, which states an attack on one ally is an attack on all. Trump says he believes that Russia's leader will keep to a deal.
I support it. I don't think we're going to have any reason for it. I think we're going to have a very successful peace. And I think it's going to be a long-lasting peace. And I think it's going to happen hopefully quickly.
Ukraine's leader will be at the White House tomorrow. Federal workers are bracing for more layoffs. The Trump administration cuts already impacting the IRS, and the EPA could be next. Police in New Mexico say they're investigating the deaths of actor Gene Hackman and his wife and one of their dogs at their home near Santa Fe. Authorities say both appeared to be dead for some time. This is ABC News.